Welcome to this episode of Tax Resolution Talk. My name's Jim Wade. I'm a tax attorney here in Maine. And in this episode, we're going to be discussing what I call my roadmap to resolution. This is the process I use to resolve a client's tax problems. Now, this doesn't go for everything I work on, but for the most, you know, the vast majority of my cases. What caused me to want to talk about it in this episode is I had an attorney contacted me not too long ago, and I had previously talked with his client about their tax debts. And, you know, the client is still working with this attorney and expressed her frustration with this whole IRS tax debt. And he said, look, can you just call the IRS up, tell them you'll offer $10,000 to resolve this $100,000+ tax debt, and then you can just wash your hands of it. I didn't have the heart to tell him that it's just not that easy. You know, let's take this specific example. If you're going to make an offer to the IRS, a debt settlement offer, you have to send in several forms with attachments and supporting documentation. It's going to go to an offer unit where it's going to be reviewed about 3 to 6 months. Then the offer examiner will contact you if they have any issues or request other documentation. So no such thing as a quick call to the IRS and wash your hands of it. So hopefully by going through this, you'll see what I normally do to resolve a case to give you a better appreciation for the work that goes into it, but maybe give you some insights on, hey, if you want to take care of it yourself, here's how you're going to do it. So let's start with the steps. Just going to go over them real briefly so that it's a little bit easier to follow as I go into detail. So the first step is we got to contact the IRS and find out what the IRS has on file. Many people don't really understand what's going on in their case. They've gotten notice after notice. It gets very confusing. And the IRS has a nasty habit of dealing with things on a year-by-year basis. So you think the only problem you have is related to 1 year, and it may be because there may be another year that's at issue, but because the IRS hasn't rolled around to the next year to do it in batches, you just don't know about it. A quick example, I've had a client who the IRS was chasing after for, I think it was like 2016, and they hadn't filed 2017 either. And so sure enough, the next year, the IRS asked for 2017. You'd think they'd do it all at once, but they don't. And just so these are the kind of things you're looking for. I had another client where he thought he only owed for one particular year. He had been filing his returns thereafter without any balances due. But it turns out that when we looked at the IRS records, he had a return that he filed where he said, well, I didn't report the distributions from retirement because it was a rollover. The IRS, however, keyed in that number because it received a document from it was a similar company that said, hey, you know, this guy got a retirement distribution and it wasn't coded as a rollover. So what they expected to see and what they actually got were different. So now there's an examination open for this guy. And so I was able to tell him, I say, well, look, you know, you owe for 2017, but you may owe for 2018 if it turns out that, you know, you were incorrect on that being a rollover. Now, I don't want to make it sound like you could only find bad news when talking to the IRS. There was a case where someone originally thought they owed $70,000, but it turns out they only owed less than $10,000. Because some of those tax debts has expired. So, but it's important to contact the IRS to find out what's going on, at least from the IRS's view. Now, typically I will offer this as a standalone service because some people are a little hesitant to, you know, hire a tax attorney. It tends to be a little bit expensive to deal with your IRS problem. It's hard, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into it. It can get pricey. So I say, okay, look, you pay me a small fee. We'll do the IRS investigation, and then I'll give you a report where we discuss my findings. But once we're done with that, I'll say, okay, look, we did the investigation. Here are some basic examples of things you could do. I don't have all of that client's financial information, so it tends to be kind of an abbreviated, You know, you could do a debt settlement, which is the IRS Offer and Compromise program, where if you your tax debt is more than the amount of your equity and assets, which the easiest way to explain it is, if the IRS seized all your assets and sold it at auction, how much would they get? So that's the first part of this calculation, you know, equity and assets. Then we say, okay, look, what's your net monthly household income? Similar to the assets, we say, you know, imagine the IRS came in and seized all of your income. And that's taxable or non-taxable, doesn't matter. If it's money coming in, they seized it, but only allowed you to keep what was necessary to pay your living expenses, how much would be left over. Then they'll take that and factor it by 12 or 24. And it's 12 or 24, really, it's based on how you're going to pay for that debt settlement. If it's going to be 5 months or less, then it'll be times 12. If it's going to be paid up to 24 months, then it'll be 24 months. So sorry about that little tongue tied there. But you can also do what they call an installment agreement. That's your monthly payments to the IRS to pay the tax debt. That can be either payments to pay it in full or pay as much as you can until the statute of limitations on collection expires. We call that the CSED. That's your collection statute end date. And it's typically 10 years. It can be extended if you filed bankruptcy or file for an offer, but it's about 10 years. So however much you can afford to pay, you either pay it in full or you pay as much as you can and the debt goes away on its own. We call that a partial pay installment agreement. Another possible option is hardship status, which is called currently non-collectible at the IRS. It's individuals and businesses can both qualify for this, but it's easier to explain it as an individual. So what is hardship for an individual? Well, typically, if you don't have much in the way of assets and your living expenses equal to or exceed your monthly income, forcing you to rely upon either credit cards or loans or things like that, that you would be in hardship status. And that includes paying your current taxes. So for some people, it may not be that, you know, they're poor, but it may be that they just have enough income to cover their current expenses and they can't afford to pay any more. They qualify for hardship. Person may also qualify for bankruptcy. Not many people are aware of this, but you can actually discharge or have sort of legally written off tax debts. They are like wine. They have to be of a certain vintage, a certain age, before they can be written off. But it's possible that bankruptcy can help. It's complicated. I'm not going to bother trying to explain it. It can get kind of make your eyes glaze over. But those are the big four options. Though we do have some other things we can look at. Penalty abatement is a big one. It's not a resolution necessarily in itself. But if, let's say, you filed a return late, and you'll get assessed what they call a failure to file penalty, which can be up to 25% of the tax due on that return, which is a pretty hefty penalty. If you can show that you would have filed the return but for something that occurred outside your control, then you may qualify for penalty abatement. If you do, then that will reduce the amount that you owe, maybe even to a point where you can, it'll be hard, it won't be easy, but you can pay it off in full. So penalty abatement is there for things such as death, disability, hurricane, fire, flood, divorce sometimes, a failure of a business. It's something that's caused you to sort of lose control and you would otherwise have filed and paid on time but for these events. Then if the person wants to move forward and say, okay, to see if you qualify for any of these resolutions or which one's the best for you, we need to do step two, which is this financial investigation. Now I want to know what's going on in terms of what do you have for assets, what you have now and what you might acquire in the future, inheritance, purchase, any other gift, however it's going to come into your state, as they call it. Then I want to look at what you have for income and your expenses. What are you making now? What are you spending now? What does that mean you have the ability to pay towards your tax debt? And is that going to change in the future? If you were somebody who met with me in January of this year, your situation probably looked radically different than what it is now here in October. I'm sure many of you, if you're like me, the first quarter of 2020 was fantastic. It was seemed like everything was going great. And then went right over the side and cratered. So for some of you, you may have lost your livelihood. If you were a restaurant or hospitality, like a hotel, motel, etc., you may have, your business may have failed or it may be close to failing. So those are things that have to be taken into account. Where you are now and where you may be in the future, because that's going to guide us into what's the best possible resolution. Going back to the options I went over, you know, if you're someone who doesn't have a lot of income and not a lot of assets, you may be a good candidate for the offer and compromise, that debt settlement. Or maybe you do have some assets, but right now you just can't afford to pay any taxes. Well, you may be hardship. Or maybe even if you do have assets and income, maybe you qualify for a reduced payment plan. And then there's always penalty abatement. But that's the goal, is to kind of figure out your financial picture, look at the options, and see which one best works for you. Then you say, okay, yeah, I want to move forward on this resolution. Then we get into step three. This is the part that everyone seems to miss when they're thinking about dealing with the IRS. It's that oftentimes it isn't simply a matter of calling up the IRS. There are some cases where you can do it. So, for example, if you owed like less than $25,000, you know, there's a form that'd be filled out. It's a very simple one-page form. I'd call the IRS up. I'd fax it to them, see if it works for them. If it does, we're done. But those are fairly rare. More often than not, there's going to be a submission of financial documents. So let's use offers and compromise because they're the ones that everyone's always thinking about. Not always qualified, but they're always thinking about it. You know, how does that work? And that's kind of what I do for all the other cases too, which is you've got to submit a form to the IRS, which says, okay, hey, this is what I want to do. In this particular case, you're going to submit Form 656, which is the offer itself. It's going to have the terms of the offer. I intend to pay you, dear IRS. And there's an application fee plus either 20% down if it's going to be paid in less than 5 months, or the first of the monthly payments I'm going to make over the next 24 months. I believe the amount of my offer is X. See supporting documentation. And as part of the supporting documentation, there's another form that you have to fill out. And for most people, it's going to be Form 433A. That's the collection information statement for individuals. And think of it as an application for a mortgage, probably the best way to think of it. You're going to list all your assets, your income, and your expenses to kind of develop what your offer amount's going to be. If you're going to offer $10,000, then your Form 433A, that collection information statement, needs to reflect that the total of your assets, equity, and your income less your expenses is equals to $10,000. If your offer is $10,000, but your 433A shows that you have assets of $50,000 and monthly net income of $1,000 a month, you know, you're going to have a hard time getting that accepted. Now, there are special circumstances that you can show to get the offer accepted, even though the amount of equity and income may be higher than the offer amount. And then there's even what they call an effective tax administration offer, where if you're somebody who has some serious medical issues, or you maybe need to care for a disabled child or other members of your household, you might be able to settle it for less, even if you could full pay the tax debt by selling your assets or, you know, having your monthly income sort of paid over to the IRS. Very, very rare. Generally speaking, the paperwork has to show that you can afford to pay the offer, and that offer is what your available equity and net monthly income can afford, and nothing more, nothing less. Then you're going to have attached to that supporting documentation. If you're self-employed, that means at a minimum 6 months of bank statements. If you're not self-employed, then you only need 3 months. If you have a mortgage, you're going to have 3 months of mortgage statements. If you rent, you're going to need to have a copy of the lease and either three months of bank statements showing the payment or three canceled checks. And on and on. There's other sort of categories of expenses that you need to provide supporting documentation. So that's going to have to go with it. So the package goes into the IRS, at which point then we go to step four, which is resolution with the IRS. Once you submit this kind of documentation to the IRS, generally it's going to be 3 to 6 months. If it isn't something that can be resolved over the phone, usually you've got to submit a document and wait for the IRS to contact you, which can take a long time. I had a document I submitted back in March requesting a hearing for a client, and I just heard back from the IRS within the last week, and guess what it told me? Please wait another 60 days before you have your hearing. So not quite a year, but we're looking at 9 months at least. Some of the offers have moved a little quicker this year. I had a case that I submitted back in October, November of last year, and it was heard in June of this year. So even in spite of COVID, but expect to wait a long time for that to run its course. Now, there is some negotiation that takes place. Oftentimes when I'm meeting with someone, I will tell them there's really no negotiation with the IRS. And what I mean by that is you just can't call the IRS up and pitch them a deal. Not like you would if you were trying to buy a business or sell your home. It's not quite like that. You can still negotiate to a certain extent on things like what should be counted as equity in an asset or what should be counted as an expense or income. Those things you can sometimes negotiate. But that's about it. But usually at that stage, IRS is contacting us saying, we need more documentation, or we have some questions, or we think this should be added on to the calculation for income. There'll be a sort of whole litany of things you'll go through with them. There'll be some back and forth communications, and it will either settle, or the client's going to say, look, I can't settle on the terms that the IRS wants, and just reject it. At which point, we'll have an opportunity to appeal to a higher authority. That's either going to be IRS appeals, which is I call it semi-independent part of the IRS. It's supposed to treat itself as separate, but typically the people that work in IRS appeals are IRS agents. Typically the people that work at IRS appeals are IRS agents. So to some extent, their loyalty lies a little bit with the IRS. But you can also, if it doesn't work at IRS appeals, you can sometimes take it to court, whether U.S. tax court, which is a specialized court that hears just tax, you know, controversies related either to the IRS's audit return, you disagree with the audit, or the IRS has rejected your offer to settle this tax debt and you think it was wrong, you can appeal it. So that's step five. This is oftentimes another opportunity to negotiate with the IRS. Usually you'll be dealing with people who are more experienced IRS agents, or you'll be dealing with attorneys who work for the Department of Justice who represent the IRS, or IRS attorneys if it's U.S. tax court. Oftentimes there'll be some negotiation. 99% of the time, once you take it to appeals or tax court, it'll be taken care of at that stage. But there is the chance that it could go to court, at which point it'll be like a formal trial. There'll be witnesses, there'll be evidence put on, testimony taken, and a decision rendered, at which point that's probably the end of it. Obviously, when you start this process, your goal is not to take it all the way to court, because if you do, then it's going to be expensive. But it's nice being a tax attorney, because if the IRS decides that they want to get a little, you know, nasty with you, you can always say, well, guess what? I'm just going to take it to court. I'm also a bankruptcy attorney, so if they really want to get bad and the client otherwise qualifies for filing bankruptcy, we'll take it to bankruptcy, because now it's completely out of the IRS's hand. Bankruptcy judges tend to be a little bit more sympathetic to debtors than they do the IRS, even though the IRS is part of the Department of Treasury, collects the money to pay the bankruptcy judges. So in summary, that's how I work most of my cases. This is how I deal with people who have a tax debt, and there's no dispute that that's what they owe. It's just, how do we figure out how they're going to pay it? Because if they could fully pay it, no problem, they just pay the IRS. The steps, just to go over it one more time. Number one, contact the IRS, do an investigation of what the IRS shows the taxpayer owes, and is there anything else out there that we need to be concerned about? Do they have any unfiled returns? Is there any examinations? Is there anything like that? Then step two is investigate the client's financial situation. You know, what do they have for assets? What do they have for income and expenses? What does that look like to show their ability to fully pay the tax debt? Do they qualify for an offer, that debt settlement? Or are they a candidate for hardship status? Do they qualify to pay it in full? But how much is it going to be per month? Because at that point, we'll start thinking of how to manage that client's cash flow. Or are they not going to be able to fully pay, but they can pay something? Great, get them into a plan. And is there any opportunity for penalty abatement? So that's step two. What is that financial situation, and how does it, what does it tell us that the person can do to resolve their IRS problems once and for all? Then once the client decides what they want to do, we go to step three. In step three, we're going to prepare the package to submit to the IRS. There's going to be some formal paperwork. Oftentimes, there's going to be supporting documents and attachments. And then we submit to the IRS and wait. It can take a couple of months. Sometimes it can take almost a year. But the IRS will eventually get back to you. And then we enter into step four, which is that resolution with the IRS. We'll negotiate where we can with the IRS to come up to the solution that best works for our client. And if the IRS decides they don't want to work with us, well, that's great, because then we could take it to step five. This is either appeal through the IRS or through the court system. And we can oftentimes get some settlements there as well to kind of put this to rest. But if not, we always can take it up into court if need be, whether it be tax court or bankruptcy court, or some tax disputes go all the way up to the Supreme Court. You never know. I hope you found this helpful. I know it's a lot to take in, and I'm sure that I've missed a couple of little things in there, but that's generally how you work an IRS problem from start to finish. If you have any questions about what I've talked about, or you have some ideas for topics to discuss in a future episode, you can call me at 207-502-7181, or you can email me at jwade@jdwadelaw.com. And don't worry, this will be in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize it or write it down. Hope you have a wonderful week, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. Have a great day.